Welcome back to the Beginning to Flourish pod from Sanctuary First. I'm James Cathcart and joined again, as always, by Albert Bogle. So in this series, Albert, we've been thinking about what it means to begin to flourish, what it means to become, to be on that journey. And we've been thinking a bit about some of these essential things that we need in life. You know, we need air to breathe, we need water to drink, we need shelter, we need belonging. And of course, in our last episode, we came to the foot of the cross and we considered love stripped bare on the cross. And the idea that the thing that's big enough for our yearning, for the thirsts that are in us, for the primal needs that we have within us to belong, to be accepted, we find in the huge, enormous love of Christ, the selfless love of Christ at the cross when love is stripped bare. And so, as we look forward, you know, and in our theme, we're going to be exploring lots of stuff to do with gardening and flourishing and growing, you know, as we think about the seed that has died opening up, a new life coming forward. We're going to be thinking about where we go next, you know, in the sense of flourishing. But our kind of frame for this final episode is thinking about the Good Samaritan, because we're going to draw this theme full circle with that story of the Good Samaritan. And so the kind of title I've got for us, if you like, is "What's so good about the Samaritan anyway?" A lot of us know that phrase, right? The Good Samaritan. And we get the idea that it's a good guy who's decent. Like, okay, yeah, fair enough. Decent guy, does good stuff, fine. But there's something else going on. There's something more going on when we look at the whole story about what's precisely so good about the Samaritan. So Albert, take us to that road and the Good Samaritan and what you reckon is so good about the Samaritan.
Well, I think the Good Samaritan is a story of the challenge: will you lose your religion and find faith and help someone who's in great need?
Yeah.
Or will you stick to your religion and let someone die? Will you preserve yourself? Will you put self first? Is that your mantra? Self first. And, you know, self-preservation and maintain my religion. Or is it something much deeper about love? And so this whole story is, of course, the Samaritan and the Jewish traveller who gets beaten up and is left to die in the road. And the people within the religious community who walk by, who are good people, but have got responsibilities and cannot touch dead bodies and cannot be seen near dead bodies. And they think this person's going to die anyway. They might even be dead. And then they would not be able to function their peace. So they had it wasn't just religious for the sake of it. It was something they truly believed and thought they were doing the right thing. But the Samaritan, again, is someone who's, again, within the family of the Jewish tradition, but they're almost like enemies. They don't speak to one another. Like, almost like Catholic and Protestants for 100 years ago. And of course, the Samaritan does the very opposite and helps, lifts the guy, touches the guy, and goes out of his way. And then Jesus asks, "Who's neighbor?"
Yeah,
and it's a response to the question, who is my neighbour? If you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself, who is my neighbour? And I think that's the order. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself. There's no love your family first, and then love your children, and then love someone else, and love those who have the same political view as you, and then And then if you've got any love left, then the world around you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the vice president of the USA hadn't read that bit of the Bible. You know, but because it the love is opened up not just for your own circle. So that's the power of the gospel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that instruction to do likewise, that we are to follow the example of the Good Samaritan. I was thinking there, Albert, that, you know, there's that, or variations of the joke, like, why did the chicken cross the road? Why did the chicken cross the road? And then, you know, various punchlines. But in a sense, that question is really the answer to me of why the Samaritan is so good. Because he crosses the road. Because he's willing to get into proximity with someone who's in need, someone who is vulnerable. He's willing to be there. And there's a sensitivity and a care that's not looking for plaudits or anything else. He's just doing the right thing. And so, you know, when you're asked that question, you know, who do we owe care to? Who do we owe kindness to? Who do we owe dignity to? Who do we owe respect to? Is it ours? Is it our group? Do we maintain a tight community by saying, we've got each other's backs? You know, everyone here, everybody here kens everybody here. We're always looking out for each other. If anything's going on, we'll sort each other out. That's good neighbors, right? We're being good neighbors because we're a solid community. If anything happens to one of us, it's like it happens to all of us. We cover each other's weak spots. We're a good community. And that might be a good community, but that is not what Jesus is talking about. That is not what we are being called to. There's something more radical, something more unusual. Who we owe care to, who we owe kindness to, dignity, respect, is the people who need us. Exactly. So if someone's in front of you, you owe it to them.
Jesus is drawing a map across the world and he's saying, there are no borders.
Yeah.
There are no borders. And that very simple parable opens that whole discussion up to take us to that place. And it's very, very challenging.
And so that is the challenge, isn't it? You know, because that's obviously, you know, this is a story. So in terms of the Bible, you know, this is a story that Jesus tells. This is not like other parts of the Bible accounting something that happened, or did it? Who knows? Maybe Jesus is pulling from experience. Who knows? So we're not going to rule that out.
It may very well have been somebody that was in the Samaritan village from the woman that was met at the well, and it might have been one of her husbands.
That's right, who, you know, they've just been chatting, they've been having a heart-to-heart, then he's on the road into Jerusalem, and yeah, spots this guy on the road, and that happens, who knows? Who knows?
the point is, he was a Samaritan, again, and Jesus was always going out of his way to go to Samaria.
Yeah, and the significance of what that means, because like I was saying in, you know, the previous episode, is we hear the word Samaritan and we think, just good person, right? That's what it means, someone who's kind, who's good, or whatever. Whereas, you know, you can insert your own word there as to what would be the word that would shock you. You know, who to you would it be truly shocking to hear Jesus singling out? You know, so it's not going to put you on the spot, Albert, but, you know, as a thought experiment, when you're listening to this, who would it really gall you to hear Jesus putting up in the middle of the story? You know, like, you know, who is the person where you'd be like, and it was a so-and-so that did it. You're like, oh no, please not one of those. No, not somebody who does that. Not someone who's in that group. Please not, please. But in that moment, that's what they're doing. They're serving the needs. And so often we're concerned about this, aren't we? Who's in, who's out, whatever. But the radical sort of thing at the heart of this message, what we're to do likewise, is that if somebody has a need, then that's enough.
That's enough.
That's enough. That's all it takes. If you're there and you can do something about it, that's all it takes. And we so often live in a society that's like a meritocracy or based on means testing, or this idea that, you know, people have got to prove themselves. They've got to do something. There's nothing, you know. So like we were saying, you know, For God's love, we don't have to tick any particular boxes. And people don't require ticking boxes to get help. You know, there are times in the long history of our church in Scotland and churches around the world where there were tons of hoops that people had to jump through in order to get help or support from the church. Mm-hmm. You know, like you were saying, these are people that weren't reading the Good Samaritan story. You know, they put all these artificial hoops up. If the Samaritan, who had every reason to just carry on, walk along, pretend he didn't see anything, you know, lots of other people did the same. He couldn't. If there was something that stirred in him, then why can't it stir in us? And what does that mean? What does that mean for us? You know, it's easy for us to talk about that in a podcast or in a service or whatever, but what does that mean for how we live our lives? Because we live in these big, complicated countries with all sorts of weird, interconnected relationships. You know, no man is an island. And you know, we live these big, complicated lives. So how are we as Christians? Are we known as people who love one another? You know? Are we known? Do people think about Christians and go, oh yeah, they'll let anybody in? Is that how we're seen? Oh, they'll just take anybody. I'm not sure it is. I don't think people look at Christians and go, oh, anyone can be one of them. Like, but that's probably how we should be known.
Absolutely.
You can't put a stripe on us. We're not a block that vote a certain way. We're not a block that always buy a certain way or shop a certain way. Like, maybe people want us to be and are pushing us to be those things, but we're not those things.
Not all the same.
We're not all the same.
Well, what next is coming up in this podcast? What next? What else are we going to be discussing?
Are you raring to go on that and the Good Samaritan? Well, something else that we're touching on in our theme, as I alluded to earlier, is this idea of the gardening and growing and kind of horticultural metaphors. Yeah. Because when you think about flourishing, when you think about the planting your seeds and growing, and stories like the story of the Good Samaritan, in a sense, is a seed that Jesus planted. You know, people are asking these questions. Who is my neighbor? Come on, no, like, define this for me. I need to have this in paper. And he's like, there's a seed bomb. You know, people make seed bombs of like wildflowers and they just throw it out and it plants up. Jesus just drops a seed bomb on them and goes, there you go. Deal with that. That's who your neighbor is. And there's this really interesting bit when we look at the resurrection where Mary mistakes Jesus for the gardener. And this is a thing that, you know, 5-odd years ago, Albert, when you and I were looking at this, that tickled us, that we just loved this bit. And was the sort of heart of this, my father, the gardener bit. Because like, is it just like, you know, again, in the Bible, because you only get these little details, the little details that we do get are quite significant. And so why does Mary mistake him for the gardener? Is it just because he's a man who's standing about and, well, who else would be there? Was Jesus doing something that made him look like a gardener? And then unpacking the sort of sense that maybe she was half right, because, you know, Jesus himself talks about my father, the gardener.
Yeah, and I remember thinking about this, saying to you, or maybe, remember, Jesus took off the grave clothes and the grave clothes were lying. Right, so at one point, it was me, you know, was Jesus naked? And he's looking around to say, where can I get some clothes? And he found some gardener's clothes in the wee garden hut, put them on. He looked like a gardener. You're the gardener. Whatever it is, something happened between the resurrection, the coming out of Jesus, and and then getting physical clothes on him again, and Mary saying, but it's picking up, you know, the gardener, but it's picking up this idea, isn't it, that if you've seen me, you've seen the Father.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a kind of picture there of he's not the gardener. But he's Mary, and he speaks her name.
Yeah.
And when he speaks
That's
her
beautiful,
name,
isn't it?
She recognizes him right away as my Lord and my God. And so there's a, it's an interesting little phrase there about the gardener, and also the resurrection taking place in a garden, the new man in the garden. The new Son of Man in the garden, Son of God, Son of Man, God's new man, God's new Adam, now in a garden, clothed like a gardener, like the Father, and no longer hiding away like the first Adam, because he recognized his nakedness, now reclothed in a new way, speaking hope and speaking words of forgiveness and saying to Mary, tell Peter, I'll be seeing him. You know, and there's a whole backstory there in this garden of the beginning to flourish. This is all going to happen. I've come through. I've conquered the cross and the shame. And now there's a new beginning for everyone. God's new man, God's new Adam, and God's new creation. And it starts with you and me and the Spirit of God, the Spirit. And you know, there's a bit where in the cross he breathes out the Spirit, and there's a translation in that John chapter, in that John chapter 20, or is it 19:31, where it says, and he breathed out the Spirit. You know, he gave up the Spirit, he gave up his breath. But the idea could be that he gave it over into the world. And so the Spirit was come now as a new dimension to it all. The breath was the breath was for everyone. All men will be prophets. When my Spirit comes, your sons and your daughters will preach, and all that. So there's a picture there, a Pentecost at the cross. So the Spirit is very much involved in this resurrection, and then there's Pentecost, the coming of the Spirit, and recognition of it all. So this breath that we've been talking about at the very beginning is weaving its way all through this into a beginning to understand something of the power of this resurrection.
Well, that's it.
So, yeah, so it's very interesting. The gardener being planted now.
Yeah, yeah.
To begin to flourish.
Oh, totally. And in our material, as we move into the season of Easter, we go to John 15, where Jesus has that phrase, you know, my Father, the gardener, and the idea about the vine, us being branches of the vine, and so on. And so when we think about, you know, looking back on this podcast series that we've done, the Beginning to Flourish pod, the beginning, we're going to do more of this kind of thing. But in this series, you know, that we've gone on thinking about these essential things that we need in order to survive, to thrive, to flourish, love, and all the rest of it. It really leans into this gardening metaphor. And like you say, you can't move in the Bible for gardens. There's like gardens everywhere, right? And this idea of that blend of kind of nature and ingenuity, you know, that you've got the beauty and vibrancy, unpredictability of nature, but being met with the intention and thought of the gardener, you know, us in made in the image of God, reflecting God's creativity, God's planting, God's gardening, if you like. But what does a garden need? You know, I'm not a gardener, you're the gardener, Albert, right? But there are plants that need enough shelter, aren't there? You need water, clearly you need to water your plants, you know. They need to belong, they need to fit, they need to find places to go. And when you're growing things, it takes time, it takes investment, it takes love. You can't force any of those things to grow. You know, there's ways you can try and get, you know, chemical X, whatever, Y, and plant it into the ground and try and sort of force that to happen. And it might work for a bit, but you're going to damage the soil long term. You know, when you cultivate a garden, you have to take the time, you have to go where the growth is, you have to nurture the plants, and God's been doing this with us. But there are times as well where, like, things fall out of season, and it's a new season, and new plants are growing. I mean, it all just writes itself, doesn't it, Albert? I mean, that's...
Absolutely.
You want to flourish? You want to be flourishing in the garden? Well, this is what it starts to look like a garden that's maybe a bit unruly, a bit overgrown. But I'm imagining, like, a big walled garden, Albert. And I don't mean walled in a way of, like, to keep people out, but I mean like that kind of like a, you know, like when you go to, I don't know, like Secret Garden, or it's that kind of childlike sense of you open the gate, and then suddenly you're in this amazing garden space, and the walls are low enough that you can climb, you know, that people can get in. Don't worry, it's not like, it's not keeping people out. The plants are growing over the edge of these walls, so it's not that kind of wall. Because I know we want gardens without walls as well as church without walls, don't we? But this beautiful space you enter into. And I was in a friend's garden last summer and I just felt so calm. And these friends grow so many different things and flowers and plants and stuff like that. And I felt like the oxygen hitting me and almost felt like a physical force hitting me. And I sat in that garden and I thought, this is a bit of heaven right here.
Oh, yeah. Well, James, you're getting me thinking. We were away yesterday buying all our seeds get them planted in the greenhouse and begin to nurture them and begin to see them growing. And of course, you're talking about the vine. This is the 40th anniversary of the Vine Trust that they founded way back 40 years ago, James.
This year, wow.
This year. And looking to see how that has flourished.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, the ships that are in the Amazon and the homes that were built in Peru and then in Tanzania. And the opportunity that people have to go and help to build. So if you're looking for something, and throwing this into this podcast, but if you're looking for something to get involved in this year, why don't you think about going on a work party out to Tanzania and start building some homes for children and for families that have very little? If you want to find out about that, go to www.vinetrust.org. No UK, just .org. But it's about flourishing. It's about allowing things to grow and seeing. One of the things you did say there, James, was sometimes a plant doesn't do well.
Aye.
And what we discovered is sometimes we have to take a plant where it is and replant it somewhere else. And I'm amazed. It flourishes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some bits of the garden where a plant fits that bit of the garden, and that's where you plant it. And I think so often in church life, we sometimes put square pegs in round holes.
Oh, aye. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I often think, you know, we've had this idea, certainly within the Church of Scotland, that we know that we're not all Church of Scotland that's looking in, but that's the tradition that we come from. Within the Church of Scotland, it always used to be that the elders would welcome people at the door and hand out the handbooks. But some elders are terrible at that because... They're really nice, nice people, but they're not good at welcoming
people. It's not their calling. It's not their
calling. You know, it's not their calling. You know, so why do we do that? We put the wrong people, you know, in the wrong places, you know. I mean, people who are pastoral elders, you know, to go and visit. And it's not a good thing for them. They don't like it. And, you know, the people who received the visit didn't like it either because it was all strained. Mm. So we need to find ways in which when we're calling people to plant people and resource them in the right calling, in the right place. And that's why, again, we can go to talk about the body of Christ and the gifts of the Spirit. And also, you know, the fruit of the Spirit. Now, the fruit of the Spirit in our lives is always the same. We all have to bear fruit. And by the way, if you've ever noticed it, it's singular fruit.
Yeah.
We're talking about the fruits of the Spirit. As though some people will get kindness and other people get faithfulness, but you don't get kindness and faithfulness together. No. It's... The fruit of the Spirit is all of these things.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, the gift of Spirit is different. The gifts of the Spirit belong to the whole community.
Hmm.
Somebody says, oh, I've got this gift. It's the community that has the gift and you're being allowed to use it at the moment. But it's not yours forever. It's like a toolbox, and the gift of healing and the gift of wisdom is all in the toolbox for the benefit of the whole community to work on and to grow and to nurture. The tools in the garden are there, but the Father is the gardener, and he uses the tools that he sees at the right time, the right thing to bring about to man. But we are the branches, and Jesus is the vine. the life of Christ flowing through us. And some things in our lives need to get cut off that aren't going to work very well. They've come to an end. And it's time to let new growth happen. So it's a great illustration coming in after Easter. So if you're listening to this coming up to Easter, thinking about preparing us to go forward into a Pentecost and all that. But that doesn't mean to say we've not to start doing that now. This is the thing, as we talk about these things, James, we need to be careful that we're not spinning it out in time, like saying this is the season for, if you're listening to this during Holy Week, that we have to be really sad. No, you've still got to rejoice in Easter, even in Holy Week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's all connected, isn't it?
Because it's all connected. Yeah. The resurrection's happened. You can't go back to Calvary again. That's gone. You've got to, in your mind, not you can't physically go to that historical place, but you can have your own Calvary and go to your own Calvary, but also experience the resurrection and the newness. It's all combined. So it's, it's all there for us to learn and live by and to integrate into our lives.
Our one whole connected life.
Yeah.
Oh, chair squeaking again. Well, I think that's us. I think that takes us out. So this concludes our initial series here of the Beginning to Flourish pod. And it is a pod. The pod is broken open. There's a couple of peas inside. They are seeds. They're going to grow into something new. We will be back to nurture these seeds and see where they go.
Yeah,
but we
I
hope you
we'll
found
get
them
back.
Helpful.
And I think we should continue this kind of theme of a losing our religion and finding faith. I quite like that.
Absolutely.
I think it's a good one to move through. Losing the religion. We can define religion. What is religion? We can think of that in a later date.
Definitely.
Definitely. Yeah. So what are we going to do? One more final plug for the Easter material, for the Lenten material?
Yes. Well, depending on when you're listening to this, we have produced, we've got on the website already, our material for Beginning to Flourish. So you can run connect groups. These are just little independent groups. You don't have to tell us you're setting one up. You can just do it. It's nice if you do tell us and keep in touch, because it's great to know that people are using the material. But it's free to use, freely available from our Sanctuary First website. And in the podcast description, we'll hopefully have links to all of that so that you can check it out. There is so much to discover on the Sanctuary First website. You might be interested and hooked in by these themes and the stuff we've talked about. But also there's a wealth of material that you can find on the Sanctuary First website and our app. We do various events and streams and resources. So do check us out and explore. I'll just keep saying the word explore. So thanks for listening. That's what happens after 3 hours of recording. So thanks for listening to Beginning to Flourish Pod. I've been James Cathcart. You've been Albert Bogle. Godspeed.
Yep. Bye.